So you go on vacation and weird things start happening around the place that you're staying in. Is it Uncle Larry? Is it Aunt Melvira? You like that name? I just kind of came up with that one. Anyway, weird things are going down. Is it the relatives or is it the ghosts? After a certain point, it's determined it's the ghosts. The story of a haunted vacation home on a recent EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to hear it, sign up to be an EPP on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Your support keeps our show on the air. It's only $5 a month, and we thank you very much for that support. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, the former resident of a hotel is still enjoying the other guests' beverages. So is that implying that in life he was enjoying their beverages too?
No, I think he just enjoyed beverages in general.
Okay.
And now he's stealing the ones from the guests.
It's his only option.
Yes.
At this point in time. Okay.
He had a bit of an issue.
Okay. A missing body haunts the store that was built over her unmarked grave. A listener finds that her deceased uncle returns to say goodbye and make a prediction about her future. And could a 911 call that was made have actually been a deceased man calling in his own death? Well, that would be an interesting tape to listen to.
Yeah.
Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi.
Are you enjoying your Pepsi Perfect over there?
It's not a Pepsi Perfect. It's a regular Diet Pepsi crappy.
We're recording this on actually it's Back to the Future Day, the day that this is being recorded. And I was reading an article earlier today about the Pepsi Perfect, which was the Pepsi that was in Back to the Future 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they released like a limited amount of special bottles for it for that day and for today. I guess it sold out immediately. There's uproar all over the internet of people not able to get their Pepsi Perfects. And it's just a whole lot of, really? Do you have that much time in your day on a Wednesday morning to be that upset about Pepsi Perfect? You know, I get it if you're, you know, excited about it, but hey, it's sold out. Okay, next, time to move on.
Exactly.
There's just a lot of rage I've seen, and I get some disappointment, but some of the posts I was seeing, pretty nasty about the Pepsi Perfect.
Wow.
I guess if you have that rage inside and you need to expel it at something, I guess Pepsi Perfect is better than a human being or a child or a family member or something to expel it upon. But still, it was just someone that's like, okay, some of these folks probably, I don't know what's going on there.
I had heard, where did I read it? I saw something about they were going to make a spoof trailer for Jaws 19.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very interesting. I know there's a new documentary out about Back to the Future. And right now, it's not super ghost related, but honestly, we have a lot of stories that almost are Back to the Future-ish on our show,
mm-hmm.
where there seems to be lapses in time. So it is somewhat applicable when you think about the ghost stuff that we talk about. Where was I going with that?
A documentary,
yes, about the making of, mm-hmm. I really, it's out now, and I'd like to check that one out. It looks interesting because I'm a documentary dork, and it's about the impact that it's had on popular culture over the last 20-some years, because it really actually has influenced quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't have the Pepsi Perfect legitimately, or the hoverboards, but there's quite a bit of other things that have actually come out of it. So interesting stuff. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can also write in on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. I think the most exciting thing that's come out of the Back to the Future hype over the last couple of weeks has been the fact that our two little girls have both told us that they're playing Back to the Future at recess.
I love that.
which I remember playing Back to the Future at recess. And now they're like, oh, I'm going to play Back to the Future.
Yeah, both of them.
It's good times. So fun stuff. Sarah writes in, hello, Tony and Jenny. Happy Halloween. I absolutely love your show, and I always listen to it at work, which helps pass the time and seems to appease the ghosts that like to hang out here. I want to share the story of when I was younger and saw something horrifying in my hallway. It was late 2000, and it was a very hard time in my life. My mom was going through treatment for breast cancer. My grandma, who had helped raise me, was in the hospital dying of leukemia. I was 15 and going through the usual teenage angst that everyone was going through at that age. I was angry at everything and everyone. I was dabbling in witchcraft, and I don't know if that had anything to do with what happened, but it wouldn't surprise me. I was very depressed and was suicidal and had even tried to harm myself. I had just gotten home from school and was hanging out on the couch reading my book about witchcraft that I kept hidden from my mom because I knew she wouldn't approve. I always heard and still hear noises and feel like I'm being watched. I felt that since I was very little and was always afraid of opening myself up to it, scared of what I might see. I had put up my book down and instead of doing homework, I decided to watch TV. Felt like something was telling me to look down the hallway, so I did. There was something black, completely blocking out about three-fourths of the hallway. I was confused, thinking my eyes were playing tricks on me. I blinked a couple of times, and it was still there. I looked away and stared at the TV, trying to ignore the blackness in the hallway. I kept hearing noises, and then what I heard next still gives me chills. I can only describe it as the sound of bones cracking. I looked down the hallway and saw a woman, but she was hunched over her legs. They were bowed unnaturally, and her arms were disfigured and bent. She had long, black, stringy hair, and I couldn't make out any features on her face. Every time she moved, I could hear the bones cracking. She was moving very slowly and wasn't making any verbal noises, just the bones cracking. I felt like I was looking at her through a fishbowl lens on a camera, and the walls were turning gray. And the hallway was getting darker. I think I fainted because I lost 5 to 10 minutes. When I came to, I was lying on the floor and the thing in the hallway was gone. I never saw it again except in a dream. It was as if I was reliving what happened. I had a lot of weird, bad, and even some good experiences, but that's one I pray that I never have again. Thank you for your amazing shows. Keep up the great work. Sorry if it was long. And kids, just say no to Ouija boards. Sarah.
Okay, considering what was going on in her life, I'm not surprised that she saw something that dark.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like, obviously when you have negative things going on in your life and unhappiness, that does tend to make these things attract to you. Mm-hmm. And I suppose dabbling in something you may not really fully understand may not exactly have been the best of ideas either.
No, who knows what doors she might have inadvertently opened.
You know, and that's not a statement on all of witchcraft by any means, because there's not, it's not all bad and not all dark by any stretch of the imagination. But there's, you know, if you don't know what you're getting into, mm-hmm. and you don't know exactly what it is you're practicing or why you're practicing it, it's very easy to stumble into an area that you may not realize what it is you're doing.
And I'd have a hard time believing that her intent was in the right place at that time mm-hmm. with it. And I think that's a huge part of it as far as what you get.
Sure. I completely agree. Interesting story. Thank you for writing that in. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Gemma writes in, hey, Jenny and Tony, greetings from across the pond in Britain. I'll try not to waffle too much with this story, but I do tend to go on a bit sometimes. I live in a place called Maidstone, said as it's spelled. I was two up to the age of 32. We moved in a terrace house that was of a Victorian era, designed with a cellar, as you know, and a basement, and attic. It was over four floors, with a kitchen and one bedroom being in the cellar and the bathroom in the attic. One day, I was helping in the kitchen on Christmas Eve, getting ready for the next day, when I was passing the kitchen scissors to my nan. Something pushed my arm with the scissors and it's up and into my mouth. Cut the roof of my mouth open pretty badly. Blood was pouring everywhere. I was panicking, crying, my eyes out, and being only five at the time, I didn't know what was happening. My nan took control of the situation and got me over the sink and made me rinse out my mouth with salt water to help cleanse the wound. My mom was gobsmacked at this point and stood basically in shock. After I was cleaned up, my nan asked me why I had done that to myself and explained that I hadn't. Something had pushed my arm. Being my nan, she was like, yeah, yeah, likely story. As much as I protested, she kept unbelieving. Is that even a word? And that was the end of that story. Apart from the scar I still have in the roof of my mouth, another stabbing occurred to me in that house. I've been going upstairs from the front room to the toilet in the middle of the day when I looked into my bedroom. On the top bunk of mine and my sister's bunk bed sat a little ginger-haired boy. He was so pale but not see-through and looked evil, almost like a Chucky-esque. I ran to the loo and darted back downstairs to finish watching Saturday afternoon TV. When it came to bedtime, my sister suggested that we go up earlier so she could read me a bedtime story. I climbed into her bunk, the top one as she was older, and started to read me Hay for My Ox. She paused and then pulled out a pair of nail scissors and rammed them into my chest right over my heart. I screamed, which brought my nan and granddad running upstairs. I was yet again uncontrollably sobbing my little heart out when my sister was asking what had happened, why I was crying, and why there was blood, where the blood was coming from. My granddad knelt down to ask what the matter was, and I managed to explain through my hitching sobs what my sister had done. He lifted her out of the bed, searched high and low for the scissors, which had disappeared, and had the look of something isn't right here. My nan took me to the bathroom to clean me up and put a plaster band-aid on my chest and hugged me tight. We eventually went back to bed. I slept so soundly that night, surprisingly. I know I've waffled on and it may sound like BS, but I have the scars to prove it. I think that something in that house didn't like me and wanted me gone. My sister still can't recall that night, and my nan, who has a sixth sense, admitted that there was a ginger boy she saw a lot in that house. What's your opinion on this? Possession? Or just my sister's mean way of getting me out of her bed? Thanks for reading. Love the show. I'm a new EPP and binge listening to the EPP downloads. Keep up the good work.
I think the little ginger-headed boy had a bad influence on the sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she may have been told to do this while she was sleeping and done it almost in a sleep state.
Okay.
But, you know, I know little ginger-headed kids can be ornery when they're not evil.
I never trust a gingerhead child.
But, you know, I think that it was probably responsible for both of the incidents.
Yeah. Highly unlikely that the sister suddenly decided, hey, I'm going to go stab that person today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's something going on there. And who knows if it ever really was truly, you know, a gingerhead child, if it was just that was the form that it was taking on when it was being seen. I would venture to say that it may be something darker if it's actually trying to physically harm someone. Although, you know, you can make the argument if you're, you know, a horrible person in life and willing to harm other people. I suppose in death, you could also try to find a way to do that, too, by manipulating
mm-hmm.
other people as well. So it's hard to tell if it's in the category, as we've said before, the ass soul or literally something very dark there. But it's good to hear of the survival. I mean, if there was a death, would anyone believe it was paranormal?
That would be
a hard one to sell.
It would be very hard to sell. And the thing is, with the other sister not having any recollection, you know, mm-hmm. they could probably put her through tests and she'd pass.
Yeah. And that would ruin her life right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it really had nothing to do with her. Very, very disturbing story. Thank you for sharing that. Tyler writes into us, hi, I'm a listener from Perth, Western Australia. Loved the show and thought I'd share my experience. Although it's not as vivid as others, it definitely had an interesting twist. I live in Perth, Western Australia. My story is about a trip I took down south. I'm 24 years old now. I play in a cover band. A few months ago, we got offered a show out of town with food and accommodations sorted for the night. We packed up the car and began the three-hour drive to our destination. We arrived around 4:30 in the afternoon, and a man at the bar greeted us and showed us to the rooms we were staying in. We followed him up a large wooden staircase, which led to a long corridor. We walked to the end of the corridor to find a right turn down another corridor. At the end, there was a glass door which led to the wing we were staying in. A few rooms and a bathroom facility. Our rooms were at the end of the corridor at the back of the hotel on the first floor. Our three rooms all lined up next to each other with the bathroom showers directly across the hall. The rooms were small and very bare, only containing a single bed, bedside table, and an empty wooden wardrobe next to the door. After we settled in and brought all of our gear in, we decided to hang in one of the rooms before dinner. One of the boys had brought a six-pack of beer, so we each cracked one and sat in the tiny room. We were excited for the night ahead. After about 10 minutes of joking around and taking some funny photos, I decided to hop into the wardrobe for a laugh. Put my beer down at the bedside table, hopped into the wardrobe, and shut the door. We each took a turn and took some photos while we were messing around. I realized I didn't have a beer in my hand. I went to grab it from the bedside table and it wasn't there. I thought maybe I'd put it somewhere else. I searched the wardrobe, under the bed, under the bedside table, but it was nowhere to be found. I know I didn't finish it. It was half empty when I put it down to jump in the wardrobe. We laughed about it and I brushed it off and cracked open another beer. We each finished our first beer and were into our second. After a trip to the bathroom, one of the guys in my band, Marty, came in to go after me. Set his beer down on the windowsill above the basin. Waited for him and I joked about being devastated that I lost my beer. Washed my hands, as did he, and we left the bathroom to head back into the other room we were previously in. Marty then remembered he left his beer in the bathroom, and after a short trip he returned with his empty hand. My beer is missing too, he joked. I didn't believe him. No, really, I can't find it. I remembered putting it on the windowsill, so I went to the bathroom to prove him wrong, and it wasn't there. We searched the bathroom, our rooms, and the 4-meter stretch of hallway between all four rooms and couldn't find it anywhere. We tossed up the idea that there may have been a maid or cleaner who had come through and grabbed both our half-empty beers and thrown them out, but we were alone in the corridor. The only people staying, plus the doors were open and we could see the bathroom from the room we were in. We hadn't seen any maid or cleaner pass through. We shrugged it off and laughed. Must be a ghost here or something. We finished our beers and headed on down to have some food and play in the show. After the gig, the hotel staff invited us to have some after-hours drinks at the bar before taking us out on the town. I noticed a photo frame of a man hanging up on the wall above the bar. I asked, "Hey, who's that?" "It's a guy who used to stay in one of our rooms upstairs," the bartender replied. "Oh, really? Did he move out?" I asked. "No, he died about 9 years ago. He was a local here and eventually moved in a room upstairs after losing his house. He's always in the bar and considered a bit of an alcoholic. Nice bloke, though." I was slightly creeped out. "He used to live upstairs?" I asked. "Yeah, actually, same wing you guys are staying in," he said. I laughed and had an amazed look on my face. I wanted to tell him about the beers going missing, but I was reluctant. "That's interesting. We've had a few beers go missing earlier today," I said. "Yeah, that would have been him. Actually, that's not the first time that's happened. People have told us they've seen him up there, and we've heard footsteps here while working late," the bartender said. I was amazed. I told him we were a little creeped out, but more amazed at the possibility that something like this could have happened to us. I told the other guys in my band about the man and the photo frame, and we all got a bit creeped out by it. We all decided to share a room that night. Nothing stirred in the morning. We packed up our gear and we went home. Not a skeptic and truly believe the concept around spirits, reliving memories from their past life, and I truly believe all this ghost wanted was one last fresh cold beer. Thanks for listening.
I think we carry a lot of our habits into death, obviously, because I don't see death actually changing our personality.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're a ghost, I can see you still wanting to do some of the same things you used to. And in this case, you know, he just wanted a beer.
So is it something he can consume? That's what I'm wondering. Does the bottle end up somewhere? Is this the frustration of you pour the, you know, the bottle and then it just kind of goes under the floor? How does that work?
I don't know. It's the logistics of it. I don't understand, and I'm
sure.
Not going to venture to guess, but I think just being able to get it
sure.
is one thing. So I don't know.
Then it dissolves into the air.
you know, sometimes when ghosts take things and you never see it again, maybe that's where it goes. Who knows what happens then?
Maybe that's the explanation for all that weird shit I found in the woods when I was a kid. When things disappear from people's homes for whatever reason, like a beer, or in that case, a washing machine and a television set that ended up way deep into the woods, maybe that's what happens. Once it's consumed, it gets dropped off at some inconspicuous location. And that's how those things got there.
It just randomly shows up.
Suddenly you show up and, hey, wait a second, the television's gone. What happened to the washer? Oh, the ghost liked it and it's gone now. But it's in a woods somewhere in northeastern Wisconsin.
I think that has to do with people dumping.
Yeah, that's probably that. But you have to wonder. Yeah. Sometimes when you find objects that are extremely out of place, like, why is that here? But anyhow. Kendra writes in, hello, it's me again. I've written in a couple times so far. I was very vague on the place I grew up. It's a small town in Tennessee, Rowan County. Not much to do, so most people I know look for paranormal activities. I have tons of stories about Rowan County. This is one of many. Back in the early 2000s, we got a Lowe's right in the middle of the county. Around the same time, a girl came up missing. They had the guy who was involved in this. They asked him several times throughout the weeks and months where she was. No real answer. Finally, they laid the foundation to the Lowe's. A few weeks later, this man told authorities that she was now buried under a large amount of concrete. They'd never find her, so they didn't even try. I guess it went unsolved. A few years later, in 2005, Kroger came right beside Lowe's. I got my first job there. One night I was working the graveyard shift as a cashier around the building's one-year mark. In a dead town, so I had time to run around the store, putting stuff up, talking to stalkers, and the likeness. I passed my friend in an aisle as I was going to the back to get ice. When I got back there, my friend was the same friend back there. I asked if she ran back there. And I mean, she would have to absolutely run all out. I didn't know what I was talking about. I told her what I had seen, and she said she hadn't even left this spot since I'd gotten there. It was 20 minutes into her shift, so I brushed it off. The next day, I was telling a friend who worked there, and he said the same thing happened to him. Also, he was stocking the freezer part one day, and he turned around with the doors on the other side of the aisle open, turned around to shut his current door, and when he turned back around, the doors were closed. As the day went on, I heard several odd stories. Some even said they talked to my friend while she was stocking, only finding out later in the night it was her night off. A few nights later, I was sitting outside on a break and a different friend of mine heard screaming. After looking around, we see a pair of legs. I don't know if the body was attached or not, as it was particularly dark. I called the cops and they were at Kroger within 10 minutes. They said they patrolled the whole area and the neighborhood across the four-lane road and didn't see anything. I requested to be taken off the night shift. A few days later, I asked my grandma what the lady went missing looked like, and she described her very similar to my friend. Then later said, you know, she's buried under the Lowe's, right?
So, okay, is that where she just stays then, or?
It sounds like she haunts that general area.
Wow. I bet you if they found her and they could put that, you know, put that to rest, and she'd stop haunting.
I would think so. That's kind of amazing that there's not like a requirement where they have to go to the company and go, okay, well, although if you don't know the exact location, is there a way to do some sort of sonar?
I don't know.
Through the floors of the Lowe's? because you can't just go, okay, start jackhammering all the floors of the Lowe's.
Sure.
But I could imagine they could say that if you were able to detect that through the concrete.
Well, if you were able to detect it, then you could really isolate a small area.
Yeah, exactly. Then rip that part up. And I think that would be fairly acceptable to do.
But I don't know if they have something that can go through that much concrete. I have no idea.
And I'm guessing the smell under all the concrete and everything, like a dog would not exactly be picking up on that.
A cadaver dog? I don't know.
I wonder if that was just, it's like too separated there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a gross thing to think about and fairly disturbing. But all these questions that we have, I had an odd question. There's a I think it was at the Home Depot here. I think it was there. The one that's out on towards the west side of town.
By the airport.
Yeah, out that direction. Was it always a Home Depot? I would assume so. It looks like it's always been one.
Yes. In fact, I remember when they built it, it was a Home Depot.
Okay. Because I was noticing there was an odd piece of flooring in there one day. And it was like on the ground, like affixed to the concrete.
Uh-huh.
And it looked like kind of like a brick, you know, piece. And what it resembled was going in a building that was something previous, and there's a little piece of their flooring left from something else. It just seemed extremely out of place for being in, you know, the concrete floors of a Home Depot.
Sure.
And I don't know. So that story kind of made me think of that. Like, what was this before? I've always very fascinated with buildings that were something else prior.
Mm-hmm.
And especially ones that, you know, had, you know, probably a somewhat of a storied past and a lot of interesting things that happened. One of our favorite antique stores here, who had been a bowling alley and an archery range and a ton of other stuff.
And a skating rink. And an indoor soccer field.
And I've always wondered, I've heard the bowling alley thing before, and we were in there the other day and I asked about that. They're like, oh yeah, well the pin setters are right there. And then it all made sense, the layout.
Mm-hmm.
I could see where everything was. Because in the past I couldn't quite figure out like, well, how did that lay out in here? It was just kind of odd. And then I saw, oh, and then you start picking up other little remnants of where things were and what was there. And it's like, oh, I get it now.
Now, did you ask if there was any bowling floor still left under there?
No, I mean, the bowling floor would have been above that.
Okay.
Because it was, you can see where it's ripped out.
Okay.
But that would have been, you can tell where the lanes areas were. And if you look on the sides, you know how bowling alleys on the, where you have the lanes on the walls on the edges, there's usually like some sort of, you know, design that kind of is moving forward towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's still on the walls.
Okay.
And you can see that in some of the antique booths. Like, oh, there's that. And the lady told me there was the arrows around the alley areas too. And I've yet to find an arrow.
Okay.
I don't know. These are the things that fascinate me. the remnants of what once was. So anyway, 855-853-4802. Our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Jeff writes in, hey guys, I've been listening for a long time. And I think the show provides an important outlet for those of us who need to share those stories. I want to share some of my experiences with what I have to believe is the paranormal, simply out of lack of any other explanation. I'll start with one that's a little short. First off, let me explain a little background. I live in Bakersfield, California. About 15 years ago, a shopping center went in called Marketplace, which offered a movie theater, shopping, and just a general place for people to hang out. The movie theater, the Cinema 14, which is currently owned and operated by Regal, is the subject of the story. I was in high school, and me and a few of my friends decided to catch a movie, as high school kids do. Nothing unusual there. I wanted to add a disclaimer here. I do not recall the specific movie we were seeing, but I'm sure it was nothing spooky or anything like that. Nothing that would have gotten into my head and made me imagine that I saw something. Anyway, after the movie, I needed to use the men's room. None of my other friends did, so they waited outside the door until the restroom. Until I came out of the restroom. I'd used the facilities in this theater many times before this, so I didn't think much of it. With the whole restroom to myself, I was standing in front of one of the urinals taking care of business. Looking straight ahead. From my left, the entrance, I heard the door to the bathroom open as if someone was coming in. In the chrome hardware of the pipes at the top of the urinal, I could see the clear reflection of a man dressed in full formal attire, black bow tie, top hat, whole nine yards, as he walked from the door across the bathroom and into the only stall at the other end of the room. I may note that this was a little strange. After all, no one goes to the movies dressed like that, and there's nothing in the area which would call for it, but I shrugged it off and continued to go about my business. As I was wrapping up, I began to realize two peculiar things. One, I hadn't heard anything further going on in the stall I saw this gentleman go into. And two, the stall door had never been closed. It still sat wide open. As curiosity got the better of me, I decided to take a look to see what he was up to. Only to discover that I was the only person in the bathroom. I'm certain I would have noticed if someone had left, as the door is heavy and definitely would have made a fair amount of noise. As I left, I asked my friends who had been standing in front of the door to the restroom the whole time if they had seen the strange man leave. And all All of them said they hadn't noticed anything. Furthermore, they told me that the door had never even opened after I had gone in. I must have gone a little pale when I realized what had just happened, that there was no other logical explanation for what I had just seen. Since the experience, I've investigated thoroughly to see if I could find any information as to how this could be explained, and I've come up with absolutely nothing. The movie theater is certainly modern in age and construction, and from what I can tell, there was nothing but a vacant dirt lot prior to its construction. I'm also not aware of any additional experiences being reported at this theater prior to or since my incident. And I myself have never experienced any other activities at the location. I'm at a loss to the explanation, however, I would swear to the experience just the same. Love to hear what you guys think, or if anyone could share a similar experience, maybe even at the same theater, that might make mine make a little more sense. Anyway, thanks for listening. Love what you guys do, and I'll be writing in with other stories soon.
I don't know on that one. That's really unusual to see somebody from that time period in the theater when it's not like an old converted theater or something.
Sure. You have to wonder if, you know, we talk about, you know, objects that people can be attached to, but there's also, ghosts that are attached to people, too. Mm-hmm. And you almost have to wonder if maybe there was someone else in the theater at that day and time, that was the person that they were attached, they were attached to some other person in the theater and just happened to make themselves known in the bathroom at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. Not to be seen again at that theater because it went on with the other person that they were attached to.
It's just an odd one.
It really is. Because the idea of someone dressed like that in a theater makes sense when you think of old-time, you know, playhouse-type theater, or just in a very aged theater. But to have it like this, where it's the Cineplex, it's not so much. Mm-mm. Yeah, very interesting. Jay writes in, "I have to tell you, I only discovered your website in the past week, but I'm completely obsessed with it. You two have such a lovely personality, and you accompany me to work every morning. I just heard you guys talking about ghost pets. I have a couple of stories to share. When I was a little girl growing up in Long Island in the early 80s, I saw a ghost of my old dog a few months after she died. It might not seem particularly strange, except that I wasn't at all close to that dog. It was my mother's pet, and it has been very ill by the time I was old enough to remember it. So it wasn't a pet that I played with ever. It wasn't something that was on my mind. Wasn't a pet I had missed because it was near death by the time I was even old enough to register its existence. Anyway, I was milling about the backyard and happened to look behind me, and I saw her standing there, directly atop her own grave. She was green in color, transparent and wavy like the heat above a barbecue. She looked very happy, just looking over the yard and watching me play. I took a step close to her, and she completely vanished. I know this sounds like just a small story, but it stuck with me throughout my life. I think the reason I find it so odd is that I wasn't at all thinking about ghosts that day, and I almost never thought about that dog. It's not as though I really missed it. It was always on my mind. I did, however, play a very significant role in my mother's life. Before my mother adopted my brother and me, that pet was her very dear to her heart pet. It had gotten her through some very tough times, particularly in the years in which she tried and failed to birth children. So while it had a lot of meaning to her, the dog was very old by the time I was adopted, so I have very little memory of it. In another instance, when I was in my mid-20s and had just moved to Chicago, I had to put my beloved cat down. I was a complete disaster at the veterinarian's office and broke down sobbing when I realized I had no other options. The operation that would have made the cat continent would have cost me thousands of dollars when I myself didn't even have insurance. The cat was very old, about 14, and it just didn't seem like the rational thing to do, but that didn't make it easy. What was really strange about that day was that when I was taking the cat to the vet, she knew exactly what was going to happen. She never acted like that to me before. She recoiled from my touch. I was heartbroken. She scooted her way all the way to the back of the cage and nearly refused to come out. That was completely unlike her. Though she was never one to love the veterinarian office, she had always been cooperative. I'd put her down and sobbed in the waiting room. I went home that night and fell asleep and could hear her crying for the next 24 hours all through the apartment. And it was a cry like I had never heard from her before. Prior to her death, she cried a normal medium cry, but after death, she literally howled. It wasn't demonic at all. It was just as though she was in so much pain and despair. Thank God it lasted only one night, but it truly broke my heart.
You know, I wondered with the first part of her story, if maybe the dog, maybe she was important to the dog. I know the dog wasn't important to her at all because she doesn't remember it, but maybe the dog had a special fondness for her, and that's why it came. The reason I say that is because when Olivia was a baby, we had a dog that it would just lay next to her all the time, just loved her. But by the time it passed away, she was only a year old, and so she would have no memory of him at all.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of like we don't really get to choose our ghosts. So our ghosts may choose us, and it's up to them, and it's their choice of their fondness towards us as far as who they're following.
Sure.
Possibly. So that does make sense. That's really spooky, thinking of having to hear your dead cat crying all night. I think I'd be going to a hotel.
Yeah, it is good that it only lasted one night. That's very different to hear that.
Normally you have kind of the, you know, the at peace animal that's, you know, you feel it hop up on your bed and or you hear a purr, or you just, you know, hear the meow in its spot or something where it's not like, oh, the cat's dying in the blender in the other room. You know, it's something comforting. And that's interesting because it was such a beloved pet. I mean, it's surprising that that wasn't the case here. I think this is one of the only cases I've ever heard where it's almost like a vengeful or just very, you know, sad, disturbing end.
Because most of the time they come back to give you that, I'm okay, we're all good, I know you had to do what you had to do kind of, you know, visit. But no, that's horrible. I hate that she had to go through
that. Yeah, that is horrible. Thank you for sharing your story and experience with us, though. Our phone number here, as you know, 855-853-4802. If you enjoy our show, the way that this show stays on the air is by our EPPs and their support. We have that program. It's only $5 a month. You sign up, you get a bonus episode every single week of the show directly to you. And, of course, access to all of our bonus episodes from the past as well. So lots of little extras there to really make it worth your while. And plus, without that support, the show would not go on. So if you like it, please consider supporting it. We greatly appreciate that. I've letter here, it says, I've always been somewhat sensitive when it comes to the paranormal, as why my mother when she was alive, or as was my mother when she was alive, even from a young age, everyone in my family has known this about me and my openness to discuss what I've seen, felt, and been aware of. I have a large extended family full of love and wonderful, caring people. My aunts, uncles, and cousins have always been very close. In early September 2001, one of my aunts had hosted an end-of-summer barbecue, and the only cousin who did not go. I had my first date with my future husband that day, and it was the last time most of us would have seen my Uncle Jay alive. He was among those lost on September 11th. On the 13th, with a head full of horrible guilt and pain that I hadn't seen him, I went to bed. The dream I had that night could be nothing other than my uncle reaching out to me to say farewell. I dreamt that I was in a large tunnel, as in the ones that a sports team would enter into arena from. As I walked down the hall alone towards the end, there was a man standing at the end, all silhouetted by the sun of an open field behind him. It was my uncle. He was an avid sports fan, football coach and for his kids, and a football player in his youth. This was his style. We weren't alone. There were many men and women meeting with loved ones at picnic benches. We sat and spoke for a while. He told me he was okay and that he loved me and wanted to say goodbye. I looked around and cried helplessly to him. He asked why I was crying, and I replied, because this is just so awful. Look at everyone. They're all okay. You will be too. And I woke. I felt confused and elated by my dream. I spoke with my aunt about this dream years later, and she told me that she saw him in a dream as well, and told her that I would marry Red. My husband is a redhead. Guess he's always looking out for us all. Love the show. Keep up the amazing work.
That's really interesting, all the picnic tables of people saying goodbye.
All at the same time in that same area. And yeah. It makes you wonder if there's some... Although, it's very much the spirit world, you know, playing on the physical world. Why would they have to be in a stadium? Why would they have to have picnic tables if you're in the spirit world and you're saying goodbye in a dream? Why is that the setting? You know, why would you have to play by the human rules of if you have a mass amount of people that are having to say goodbye? Okay, what's the best place to do that? Let's go to a stadium, get a lot of people in there. That's a very human rule to put on something, or logistic to put on something. Why would that be the case in the afterlife? That's just, it's so odd.
It is odd. I don't know.
It doesn't, it's an interesting story. I believe it happened, and it just, that's such an odd element to it of why is that at play? Why is that part at play with it?
I don't know. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that the people, even though they're in their dream, that, you know, the dead obviously aren't going to have any rules, but the living are still going to some degree have roles even in dreams, I guess.
Is it so the living can understand what's going on and what, how to follow? You know, essentially it's like, here's the path, you need to go down here, and...
I don't know.
I mean, what is, where were you going with that?
Well, I think it's more so, you know, once you're dead, I think you are opened up to a whole, you know, obviously different gamut of roles. And... you know, you don't have to do things as based on the physical world. This may have been a case where, even though these people were being visited in their dreams by their loved ones, you know, in their mind, they're still operating as how things would work in the physical world.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Maybe that's just something that made it more... approachable? I don't know.
Okay. Natural? Yeah, I could see that. Interesting story. Next letter. Hi, Tony and Jenny. I love your show. Listen to you a few times a week, usually during my days off and when I'm going for walks to get my exercise. Things that go bump in the night can't get me in the middle of the day in public, right? Anyway, on with my story. I work at a police department and have been assigned as a supervisor for the 911 dispatch center that's located in my police station for the last several years. Through this dispatch center, we receive 911 calls as well as every non-emergent type of call you could think of. Our dispatch center handles police, fire department, ambulance, and even animal control related calls. About 5 years ago, we started receiving a call about once a week for several weeks from an elderly man. This man was clearly suffering from dementia and he lived alone. He would always call in and say there was a snake somewhere in his house. I have a snake in the fireplace, I have a snake in the refrigerator, snake in the chandelier. You get the idea. Animal control would always go out, and as always, there would be no snake. Well, one Saturday or Sunday morning around 10 a.m., we received a call from this gentleman who stated the friendly snake had reappeared somewhere in the house. I don't recall where, and I needed animal control to come deal with the snake. Our animal control officer, who by now was very familiar with the individual, made his way to the house and arrived about 15 minutes after the original call. Upon arriving at the house, he knocked on the door and received no response. Looking into the window, he saw the body of the man lying on the floor. The animal control officer requested paramedics and, when they arrived, had to force their way into the house. They examined the man and determined that he had passed away. That's not the weird part. The weird part is that the paramedic who pronounced him dead told us that based on the rigor mortis and other physiological changes that occurred to the body after death, the man had been deceased at least for 6 hours. I can only assume that somehow the man called in from beyond and, using the same tact he'd always used, requested some help in having his body get discovered in a timely manner. That's the only paranormal event I can ever remember being part of, and I can say I'm fairly happy about that. I do have a paranormal story that occurred to a friend of mine, but it's been years since it happened. I need to get my memory refreshed before I share it with you. Thanks for the podcast. Really enjoy listening to the show.
I think that makes sense.
I want the 911 tape.
I think that's really funny, though.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, because you have to wonder, I mean, is that kept? Although I wonder if it wasn't a 911 call, if it was to the Animal Control Center, if that's recorded.
I don't know.
I have to ask.
Yeah.
If it's still there in existence and, you know, how long ago that happened. I know today a lot of it's digital and gets stored for quite some time. You know, back in the day, it was all reels and you only have those for so long because you only have so much physical storage.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if that exists or if it did exist, you know, if you were able to listen back to that. I wonder if we would be able to listen to it if it exists anymore.
Sure.
Because a lot of that stuff ends up being public record and public domain at a certain point. But anyhow, Lauren writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I've written in a couple of stories in the past, but this one I'm writing in now is one that had occurred this week. Currently living in Madrid, Spain, and working as an au pair for a family, which is three children. It's always a pretty full house around here, so there are constantly noises coming from every direction, it seems. This is my third week here. However, this past week has been a bit different. During this weekend, the family took a day trip to a neighboring town to visit some family friends. I opted to stay at the home that day as I was longing for a day of silence and some alone time, which can be near impossible to come by during the week with the kids. When home alone, I couldn't help but notice the feeling that overcame me of someone watching me. There were even a couple of times where the feeling was so strong that I would turn around very quickly, fully expecting to see someone there, only to find the room was completely empty. A few times, I've been in the shower or lying in bed, and I'm totally certain I'd seen a shadow by, but I usually tell myself that it must be one of the parents or kids walking by and not to overthink it. Well, yesterday, my opinion changed. I was standing in my room getting my things together to go pick the kids up from school when I heard a loud noise coming from the living room, about 20 feet from my room. I instantly felt a chill run through my whole body, but I still went to examine what it could have been. Fear struck me when I walked in and saw a box of Legos that had just been picked up earlier that morning, placed on a table, lying on the floor against the wall. I stood there shocked, but I was already running late to get the kids, so I just put the box back on the table and left. I hope this would be the only strange thing to happen to me that day. However, when I returned to the house, another event took place that again made my blood run cold. The two large, heavy wooden doors leading into the living room were closed. I was absolutely positive that I did not close them, and they were both wide open when I left. I didn't want to startle the kids, so while they were about their normal afternoon ritual of watching TV while I prepared lunch, I walked through the entire house, checking all the rooms, bathrooms, and closets, making sure that someone had not gotten into the house. However, this home had a very advanced security system, and we're all very diligent about keeping the doors locked. So I knew there was no way that someone could have gotten in. I've not mentioned these events to my parents in fear that they might think I'm either making this up or that I'm crazy. However, if something else happens, I think I'll be obligated to tell them. I had not previously considered myself to be sensitive, although since I have arrived here, there have been several times where I've been in public places, such as the metro, train, or the plaza, and I feel as though I'm overwhelmed by the emotions of other people passing by. Jenny, I know this is something that you're familiar with, so I just wanted to get your opinion if you think that someone can develop sensitivity over time. Sorry if this story runs a little long. Just wanted to be sure I didn't leave out any details. Just recently became an EPP, and I'm really enjoying listening to the stories while exploring Madrid. Thanks, y'all. Lauren.
I don't know that you can develop a sensitivity later on. I think it's more so you always have it, but it gets stronger for whatever reason. And it could be the more you're in tune to things and paying attention to things, that the more stuff starts to make its presence known.
I agree. I think it's pretty much like what you just said, where it's not necessarily that your sensitivity is going to come on later. It's being in tune to it and understanding it,
mm-hmm,
and how to use it and being aware of it.
Right.
And I think that might be what's going on here. Mm-hmm. It's essentially becoming more comfortable with your body.
That's great.
As you grow up, you'll become more comfortable with your body. Now, it sounds like something from one of those films.
I hate those films.
from school. But that's kind of what it is. You know, mm-hmm, it's being aware of what you are and who you are and the abilities that you have. So that's probably what you have going on there. Flying Legos.
Yeah.
Good times. Jeep Dave writes in, "Hey, fellers." Haven't heard that in a while. I have a few, but I'll start with the first one that really left chills, even though it was really kind of weak. Me and some buddies were checking out this old stone house in the woods of upstate South Carolina. It'd been in a fire at some point, but was mostly there. The entire time we were there, it felt normal. Nothing. Zip. So after wandering around, we got bored, as most early 20-somethings do, and left. We piled into the buddy's old Grand Wagoneer I was driving and started to back out of the old dirt drive. Me, being the asshole I am, decided to pull a Rockford and accelerated at a high speed in reverse. Quickly, I spun the nose of the Jeep around, and as the headlights settled on the opposite direction, we were all greeted by what became known to us as the Hefty Bag Monster. It looked like a very wrinkled black trash bag that was hunched over. I think it was as surprised to see us as we it. We all sat in silence as the Jeep rocked on its springs and the 360 V8 idled erratically. Suddenly, it shot up and toward some pine trees. This broke our trance. A buddy in the back seat shined the flashlight towards the trees, and you could see the limbs shake slightly as if it was running up the outer edges of the limbs. We sat there a moment, but I slowly drove off. The ride home, we sat in silence. None of us had any idea what we had seen that night. I'm a truck driver now. I have plenty more to tell. Just started listening about a week ago. And enjoy the program. If you haven't done an episode on phantom vehicles, you should look into it. I've been studying the phenomenon for years and have learned what to look out for. Anyway, love the show. Jeep Dave.
That is weird. Do you think it was a shadow being?
I'm thinking it's a shadow person.
Okay.
Just because that they're described, I've never heard it like that, in a Hefty Bag ghost, but essentially a shadow or an entity that's darker than dark or blacker than black. You can't see through it, but it appears to be like a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that's probably what they experienced there.
It's strange that when it went up the tree that it moved the limbs and branches.
Yeah. Fairly energized shadow man there, or Hefty Bag man, whatever you want to call it. Thank you, Jeep Dave. Would love to hear more of their stories and stories about phantom vehicles.
That would be cool.
That'd be great. Dave writes in, "I drove from to Las Vegas from South San Francisco on New Year's Eve in 2001 to 2002. I used my dad's car, which is important because he lived an hour west in South San Francisco. And at the time, I lived in Tracy, California. The car swap added 2 hours to my return trip. Met my friends and we had a great time. As New Year's Eve went on, we talked to a hotel employee on the strip who told us that if we didn't leave early, we'd be stuck in traffic for hours. Right then, we decided to catch a quick 2-hour nap and head out. In your 20s, that type of thing seems like a good idea. We said our goodbyes at around 6 a.m. and went our separate ways. They to San Diego and me to South San Francisco, and then home to Tracy. A couple hours into the trip, I began to nod off at the wheel. I almost fell asleep at least 5 times. And every time, just as I was on the verge, out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone sitting next to me. It was a woman with long silver hair. She was just sitting there, facing forward. When I saw her, I would jerk awake and stay awake for a period of time, wondering what that was. I actually thought I was hallucinating. I made it to my parents' house and swapped my dad's car for mine, turned around and drove home. I felt fine as I hit the San Mateo Bridge. But by midspan, I was frightened hard to stay awake, and I was losing. But she was there again. This time was different, though, because the last time she was facing me, hands on the center console, pushing her head and upper body towards me. In that instant, I knew I was going to die. A fear so deep I can't explain it shot through my body. It jerked me awake, and I stayed awake, not only until I got home, but deep into the night. Looking back, I realized that I wasn't scared of her. That fear, I think, came from her communicating to me that if I didn't wake up, I was going to die. I firmly believe my passenger that day, whoever she was, saved my life.
I think so. It makes you wonder if she died in some kind of relatable instance, like falling asleep at the wheel.
Sure. And now she roams the roads trying to prevent others from having the same fate that she had.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting way of looking at that. It's exactly what I was thinking too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was going to go right there with it.
Sorry.
No, I agree. I wonder that too, especially if there's not a recognizable trait to her. It's like, oh, it's grandma.
Right.
You know, anything like that. It could just be a stray Good Samaritan ghost that's out there on the roads. Good story. Thank you for writing in and sharing that experience with us. If you like the show, please help keep us on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. You sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Lots of episodes there. More than 60 of them jam-packed with some of the best stories we've ever had on this show, and they're exclusively for our EPPs. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.